103.3 FM. Streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning, Ed. Welcome back to the program. Thursday edition of Buyers and Company. When are we at the Children's Museum? Is that next Thursday?
Next Thursday, a week from today.
Is it time for the Duck Derby already?
It's time for the pre-sales of the Duck Derby.
All right, that happens Derby weekend, which I guess is what, the first weekend in May?
Yeah.
So I guess we're not that far off.
And that will be here before you know it.
All right, and then Corks and Forks. I was looking through all of the calendar of events that are on the...
Yeah, Corks and Forks is coming up, isn't it, towards the end of this month?
The end of this month, yes. And then the Business Expo. I start thinking about between now and maybe what, I don't know, Labor Day? It's
not.
Don't think about it. Just take it like a week at a time.
I hope you enjoyed your break because it was over.
All right. Go to nowdecatur.com for all of the details. We welcome into the program Danny Kraft, who is literally a good friend of the show, good for the community. She's done a lot of work in the educational arena through the Community Foundation. She is vice president with the Community Foundation of Macon County and executive director of the Education Coalition. Some of this stuff, you guys work very quietly down there, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, I mean, you guys just sort of like just keep grinding it out and grinding it out, doing a lot of work in the classrooms. Do you still enjoy doing what you do?
Well, I love what I do. I'm very blessed to be able to do it. And we try to work quietly, Brian, because it's really about the impact and about the community, and it's not about us. So we don't want the light shined on us. We want it shined on the improvements that are taking place.
All right. Well, you're going to have to, before we introduce our guests, because I think education and healthcare and social services, just the acronyms alone drive me crazy because these fields love, you know, and it's something you live and breathe every day, but most people kind of go, wait, what is that? I want you to explain what trauma-informed partnership means, and then we'll introduce the guests that are in the studios and the role they all play in this.
Sure. Well, actually, it started with a really private conversation of a bunch of people who really care about what's happening in our classrooms and what's getting in the way of the academic achievement and social and emotional development of our students. And so we came together and we through research and through evidence-based, we learned the fact that brains are changing and the architecture of a brain is changing. And it's all due to the trauma that's happening in the lives of students, and it's getting in the way of learning. So we ask a simple question, what can we do about that? We pooled together our resources. We came up with a simple name called the Trauma-Informed Partnership. And we learned through this process we didn't need a big grant. We didn't need funding. We learned that it doesn't cost to care. And that's what we decided to come together about. And
okay.
I think I stole that line from Jill Reedy, but that's what
we came
together.
But what you
with.
Just said is impactful because it's just the exact opposite of what you hear most times when people, oh, well, we need to spend more dollars. We need to fund some sort of program. We need to. It's just looking at it from a different point
exactly.
of view. You talk to teachers in public education, and it is not unusual for a kid to come to school with the same level of trauma as somebody returning from Afghanistan or
Absolutely.
Iraq. People have a hard time, if you're fortunate in your life, not to have this. Sometimes people have a hard time wrapping their head around that, but it happens.
You're exactly right. And one of the things we try to communicate is we are not coddling these students. We are not excusing their behavior. If anything, we hold them more accountable because we teach them to self-regulate. We teach them to learn different techniques so that they can come back to a place, get in the right place in their brain to work so that they can then learn. So we hold them more accountable than kicking them out of the classroom would.
All right. Well, introducing the guest around the table here. Carrie Hogue is the principal at Muffley Elementary School. Muffley's such a happy-looking place. Does it feel like that inside? I mean, you're right up this road from the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of a happy area.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been principal there?
This is my fifth year.
Yeah, fifth year. And did you know you wanted to be a principal? I mean, is that
no.
something when you went into education?
No. Nope. I thought I would retire after, like, 75 years of teaching or so.
All right, so what made you get into the administrative side?
Honestly, did a master's degree, you know, moving kind of up the pay scale kind of thing, excuse me, and I had a group of friends who said, let's do this administrative one. I'm like, okay, I have company, like this is going to be a good thing. And then I really didn't think I would use it. I thought, I mean, it's good experience. It was a great introduction to a broader view of the school, and I really enjoyed that, but I didn't think I would be doing it.
Well, I think that the principal is so, I mean, obviously the teacher in the classroom is vital, but I think culture and leadership in a building is essential. For years, I served on the Decatur Public Schools Foundation, and you could see just by grant applications where things were happening or not happening. It was like a map. And we had these conversations. You keep rewarding the same teachers over and over. And my thought was always yes, you know, because you want other people to copy mm-hmm. that rather than spread it out like it's because you can't spread. Enthusiasm sort of has to be earned. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the principal really kicks in, don't you?
I do, and it's kind of a, it can be a very heavy weight. It's a humbling responsibility, but an honor as well.
Okay. Well, also with us is Jill Reedy, the Assistant Regional Superintendent for the Macon-Piatt Regional Office of Education. Your office is one that I think a lot of people get confused by.
Yes.
What is it that you do if you had to give your elevator speech to someone who has no knowledge at all? Maybe they've kind of heard of it. They know Matt, whatever. What is it that you guys do?
We do a lot.
Yes.
We really are the liaison between the State Board of Education and all of our schools in Macon and Piatt County. So we oversee compliance, licensure, provide professional development support. It's kind of like Danny said, a lot of people don't realize behind the scenes all of the things that we do.
Yeah, but you guys are heavily plugged in and working with all of the county schools.
Yes, all of Macon and Piatt County.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The Piatt thing is, I think, what throws people too. It's like, how did Piatt get put in there? All right, and then Dr. Jeannie Kaler is an educational researcher, and where are you from?
I'm from Bloomington, Illinois.
Okay.
I got involved with the trauma-informed partnership as part of an assistant professor at SIU School of Medicine there in Springfield, working with the Department of Population Science and Policy. So we are responsible at SIU School of Medicine for 66 counties throughout the state. We went on a look to find who in our area is doing innovative things around health and education. We made a stop here in Decatur and found a wonderful group of people that were actually tackling the bureaucracy of education to facilitate change, which is why we decided to partner with them to look a little closer at what was happening here, because there's some pretty amazing work being done and pretty tough problems they're trying to tackle.
It really are, because you're tackling life as it exists, and bureaucracy's not real good at that. I think as I get older, that is my enemy, I believe now. It's not politics, it's not parties, it's bureaucracy, because it moves so slow, it turns so slow, changes so slow, it becomes institutionalized to the point of just, why do we do this? Well, it's what we've always done sort of thing. And that can be a city or a school district, or certainly if you look at Springfield or Washington, D.C., you see it in action every day. So, Danny, how did you guys, cut through that? There's a whole definition of how red tape, the whole phrase occurred, and it's an interesting story. But how did you manage to cut through bureaucracy?
I think really this sounds simple, but it really came down to the fact that we were caring individuals, and we looked at what was currently happening in the landscape of our educational system and found out it wasn't working and it wasn't addressing the problem. And just because that problem or that problem child or that problem behavior is no longer in your classroom doesn't mean that the issues go away. And so we wanted to focus on the students, and we also wanted to focus on the self-care of the teachers so that they could be built up and so that they could have insight to understand exactly how to help them address it too. So when we started the partnership, one of the things we really started with was teacher self-care and teacher awareness. We also have professional development for the superintendents and for the principals, and Jill could probably speak about that a lot better than I can, but we wanted to make sure the training base was there. We knew we had this caring group, as Jeannie said, and we knew we wanted to do something different than what was happening in other parts of the state. We just didn't know at the time, quite honestly, it would be this innovative, and we didn't know that we would garner national attention from it.
Okay, before we get to the Toronto part of this, let's talk about the schools that you guys are working with the pilot schools. So there were two Decatur public schools and three county schools, correct?
Yes.
And how did that get decided?
So what we decided was let's take all of our resources. We have, four caring organizations with the Illinois Education Association, of course, Danny's group, the Education Coalition, and the regional office, and SIU School of Medicine.
So and I believe Milliken has also joined that recently, right?
Joined, yeah. Yes. And okay. So we have all of these people, and to have the health background piece with that Jeannie brought to the table and her SIU partners was powerful. So we decided, let's focus our resources on four or five pilot schools that we asked to apply that were all in. And so we actually sent out an application and had around 13 schools apply. And we selected through leadership, really looking at who would be on board. We needed them to be all in because we needed these schools really devoted to this and passionate about it so that they would create time not just to train teachers, but to train other staff as our school teaching assistants, our support staff, cooks, custodians, bus drivers. And so we selected Muffley Elementary, our Decatur Public School, another DPS school, Franklin Elementary, Argenna Oriana Elementary, Sangamon Valley High School, which was nice to have a high school component, and then DeLand Weldon, which of course is a K through 12 district, so we had that middle school component.
Okay, so what did their participation mean? What did they have to do?
So we started the first year, and really, you know, we didn't have a clear roadmap.
This started in 2016, by the way. Okay.
Yes, and honestly, when we started, we didn't know where we were going. We just knew that we had to get the information out there. And so our journey really began with these five schools where we were just spending almost an entire year on knowledge and making sure that we had the same background information on toxic stress and what toxic stress does to the brain and complex trauma. And from that, we discovered so much. So we spent a year through book studies, again, things that didn't cost money, going into the schools, working with the teachers, having those really difficult discussions, because we knew if we wanted to create systemic cultural change in these schools, I mean, really make a difference, that we had to feel it in our hearts first and really understand and believe in this. And that's how people, I believe, are motivated to change. And so it was an effort on all of our groups going in, and each of us really adopted one of these schools and went in, and I partnered a lot with Carrie and went in to make a difference.
All right, so tell me about the experience there at Mofley.
The first year really was a learning year, that we called it our pilot year. So there was a lot of any professional learning time we had set aside that was devoted to this. I intentionally didn't ask my staff to do anything different that year. It was more what resonates with you. And then I would see things take off in the classroom, and then they were telling the people next door and across the hall, I tried this and it's really working, or I tried that, or this didn't work this way, but if I did this, I got a great result. And so it kind of grew from that for that first year. And then at the end of the first year, we kind of had to sit down. I sat down with my leadership team. I said, okay, the learning year's behind us, not that the learning stops, but the learning year is behind us. What are we going to do now that would set us apart as a trauma-informed school? And we came up with some things from there that we would move forward with.
Because at the end of the day, that's what you have to have. I mean, you're not in the classroom anymore, but you have a bunch of teachers that work for you, that there has to be an impact there. I mean, you can study something forever, and if it doesn't actually, you know, affect change, it's just more bureaucracy. All right, so there were like 12,000 or something like this research pieces that were submitted to this, and I'm sure it's a big acronym. What was the AERA, Presidential Cross-Cutting Session? I don't have any idea what that means. Explain it.
Sure. It's the American Educational Research Association. It's the premier educational research association in the world. It's one of the largest attended conferences, actually, in the United States. So for the work that has been happening through this trauma-informed partnership to be recognized and credible research done is huge. So we talked not just about the success that we did see in the classroom, but still some of the policy gaps that exist for our teachers and our administrators, because we do have some health gaps that we have to work on to make a difference for them.
All right, you're not saying you have all the answers. You're kind of putting a roadmap together of where we need to go. Now, I'm going to bypass how the American Educational Research Association ended up in Toronto, Canada for their annual meeting. I'm sure it was, you know, a very nice visit. But what an honor, Danny, before we hear about Toronto. I mean, but to what you guys sort of intuitively felt at the beginning to turn into something that's recognized out of 12,000, you know, submissions, you know, across the entire United States of America, that's a pretty cool thing.
It is, Brian, and we're really humbled by it. Again, we're so excited about what's happening in these schools, and the trauma-informed partnership is just growing in our footprint. We've added Milliken to our mix, as you already mentioned. Tomorrow we're presenting out at Richland Community College. We have hosted some community-wide events trying to get the information and the awareness about trauma, toxic stress, what it's like to deal with it, how it affects learning, how it affects performance on jobs. Because what's happening in our schools right now, if we don't address this, it's happening on our factory floors tomorrow. So there are reasons why the people in our community, the businesses, need to be caring about what's happening in our schools and how we're teaching the students to react and manage the trauma that they have every day. Because this really is a community issue. We started with the schools, but it really is a community issue, too, and we need to make sure that everyone is aware of that. So that's how we're expanding our footprint now.
I don't understand why even people who are just straightforward business thinkers, and put compassion over here, why you wouldn't want to do more front-end work to lead to more productive lives than the cost and expense of what's on the other end of that if you don't. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me why people would be not for something like that. I mean, it's an investment versus, maintenance.
You're right. It really is. When you're talking businesses, not students, but when you're talking businesses, this is a return on investment. And if you don't, if we as a society don't start taking these proactive steps, there is no chance we're going to turn this around. And one of the wonderful things about the trauma-informed partnership and especially our partnership with Decatur Public Schools and these two schools that were highlighted in the paper is the fact that this is not a certificate. You don't get to go become trauma-informed. This is a journey. This is really cultivating a culture shift. And it's messy, it's hard, and it takes complete dedication. But it's not something you can put a label on yourself now and say, oh, we're a trauma-informed school, because it comes little steps at a time, student by student, teacher by teacher.
Okay, so what was Toronto like? Were you guys inundated with sort of people wanting to know about what you guys were doing? Did you learn, you know, about what other people are doing? What was the conference like?
It was fascinating for me. This was my first time attending, and I was very nervous with Jeannie, and she said, trust me, you'll be fine, and I didn't know if anybody wanted to hear what I had to say, but it was fascinating. Once we finished the question and answer session, and all of the questions were directed towards our pilot, our case study of what we have done, and people from all over the world came up to us afterwards saying, you know, we are so excited and feel so good to know that this work is being done somewhere. And it was a shock for me. I just assumed that this work was being done everywhere, and you know, why not? And this is what's good for kids and the right thing to do. It was very exciting to hear their questions and to know that there's interest and to make those connections in different parts of the country.
All right. So what happens next, Danny? I mean, I know that's the obvious question, but I mean, you know, you have two public schools in the pilot, three county schools. You know, the question is like, how many schools? How do people get involved? How do businesses get involved? How do parents get involved? How do educators get involved? What happens next?
Well, we're continuing the journey. We, as I said, already are making a bigger footprint. Jill and Matt Snyder both present throughout the state about the work that we're doing here. There's actually a national trauma-informed conference, and we've presented it that many times, and we'll be attending that again this summer. We're continuing to grow. Jeannie's research that she's done on these Decatur public schools will continue to be shared with our community so that we can help people to understand this. But really, Brian, it's still just continuing the journey. It's making sure that that knowledge is there. It's one of the things that the people in the room that are educators that can speak to this better than I can, but one of the things that they really resonated with me is that change in the brain. I say when I speak about this, we make accommodations all the time for children who are physically different. If they're hearing impaired or sight impaired, these children suffering from trauma are physically different. Their brains are different, and we are making no accommodations. If anything, we are isolating them because of it, or we're telling them, sit down, be quiet, it's time to take out your math book. And they are not at a place that they can learn right now.
It's important. There's so much gray in this, because I can hear people of a certain age just going, oh, God, we had to do this and just grow up.
Yep.
You know, there's that. And I'm sure, I'm glad at least the Illinois Education Association is involved in this, because I think sometimes, you know, teachers that have been, you need experience, but you know, I always recount a time, and this was back when our guy was, you know, in grade school, and he brought home a lesson plan on paper, which was weird enough, and it had a rotary phone on it, you know, and it's like this teacher was making the same copies of this thing for like 25 years, and she was a great teacher, but it was like, teachers are no different than anybody else, right? I mean, they're reluctant to change. Mm-hmm. I mean, people, just human nature fights change. Is that one of the more difficult aspects?
Honestly, I didn't find that so much with my staff. They really
That's
went
great.
In. It is. I can't be more proud. I can't. I mean, I'm not saying it's not been easy. When they've said messy, when they've said hard, and if anybody thinks there's like a checklist to follow to get to this point, that is not the case. But my staff really went in eyes wide open, hearts open, ready to embrace this.
Oh, that's fantastic. But you have people, you know, all over the place. I mean, teachers aren't any different than any other mm-hmm. profession, right?
And I think that was what was interesting, is the wide range of things. They got to pick and choose what worked in their classroom. So it wasn't as if the mandate was you do this for trauma.
Okay. Guys, we really appreciate it. We're running out of time here. Keep up the great work. Keep us posted so we can let the folks know the hard work and what you guys are doing. Congratulations on the great honor being selected out of all of those folks to be up in Toronto representing Decatur. We appreciate it. And bye, County. All right. We'll take a break, back with more. Here's Lindsay Romano with your 3-day forecast.
Today we have cloudy skies. Highs are going to be near 74 degrees. Then tonight we can expect some showers, maybe some thunderstorms as well, with lows around 44 degrees. Tomorrow, looking at sunny skies with highs around 57 degrees. Saturday, more sunshine, highs around 57. It is currently 54 degrees in downtown Decatur.
Patients receiving a total knee replacement at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital are now available to go home the same day of surgery. Traditionally, a joint replacement requires 1 to 3 nights in the hospital, but now patients in overall good health and who have the right support system can recover in the comfort of their own homes. Our goal is to get you home for dinner and back to life faster. Ask your physician if this is the right option for you. St. Mary's is Decatur's leader in same-day total knee replacement.
Spring is finally here, and that means golf season is in full swing. But what about those rickety old golf clubs in the corner of the